RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at USAA.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. Three, two, one. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And real quick, I'm going to do a commercial so that way I don't have to edit it in later. If you are looking for any type of scents, whether that is real or synthetic deer urine, I'm a huge fan of the Ropadope system by Code Blue Sense. Go to CodeBlueSense.com, enter the discount code NFC20 for 20% off, and that's going to save you a little money. And I'll tell you what, if you have not been experimenting with mock scrapes, I strongly suggest giving it a try. At least if you have an extra trail camera that you're not using, or it's an old, out-of-date model but still works, make a mock scrape, put a trail camera over it, and just see what happens. That's all I can say. I've had pretty good results. Mark Boardman here from Vortex. Do you ever mess around with mock scrapes?
You know, I've never created mock scrapes. You know, a few years ago, I was really into using scents, you know, scent wicks and creating trails, or like scent drags, you know, that would go by my stand. Never shot like a giant off it, but had some really good results that almost make me think, I should go back to it.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like nowadays it's like I'm trying to, like, I'm hedging my bets. It's like, do I want to walk around mm-hmm. and spread my human scent and have the scent drag or yeah. not have the scent drag and, you know, yeah. kind of, you know, I guess, you know, dial back my the spread of my human scent. But, man, I had some really good success. I mean, bucks coming in, nose to the ground, nearly got a big buck one time because of it. So, I mean, they do work.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, my friend, this is the Hunting Gear Podcast, and eventually we are going to start talking about hunting gear and equipment, but Iowa recently, in the state of Iowa, you're familiar with Bill Winkie, right?
Yep.
Yep. Bill. Everybody knows Bill Winkie. He's one of the OGs in the hunting industry. He was shooting giant deer before the craze, you know, the big buck craze happened here in Iowa, and his farm is for sale. One of his farms is for sale right now. And I am officially going to ask you if you would let me borrow $7 million so I can buy this farm and I will let you hunt on it anytime you want.
Dan, ooh, boy, this is an uncomfortable question because I was about to ask you the same thing.
Can I borrow some money?
I think we both might be in a pickle here.
I know.
Wouldn't that be nice, though? Oh man.
I'll tell you this, like, as much as I hate how hunting is kind of going to the pay to play system, and if you want big deer, you have to have a large amount of land in order to control that, right? I mean, this is no secret. This is how everybody's doing it.
It's optimal.
Yep. And so just, I've always thought to myself, you know, it would be pretty cool to be able to like have everything ready before the season starts, walk into a ground blind on opening day over a clover plot where you've had cell cam pictures of a big buck coming out religiously. October 1 steps out and you shoot him opening day because he's there. You know everything about where he lives. There's a little piece of me that be like, dude, that's cool, right? That's cool because it's an all year thing as opposed to what guys like us are doing. And that's, we got to grind a little bit in order to get some of these, you know, deer patterned and get a tree stand in the right draw or whatever the case may be. But I still think that would be, it'd be pretty cool. I feel like it'd be pretty cool like one or two times, but then after a while, I feel like it would lose some of its gusto. What do you think?
I mean, so much of hunting is contextual, right? You know, as far as like, you know, you're like, oh, man, if you want to shoot a giant, you know, like you said, having a big tract of private land that you can manage, that's going to be optimal. That's going to put the odds in your favor. But like, it also doesn't mean that, you know, if you're grinding out on the public and, you know, just going from spot to spot to spot, and maybe you got multiple cameras out and you're working hard at it and, you know, you kill a 3-year-old, like that's a big deal too, or 2-year-old or, mm-hmm. or any year, right?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
going to be a real big deal. So, you know, I think when we compare those things, you know, to one another or other hunters or, oh man, this guy should like it's always good to like realize the context and, you know, what is your reality. Now, to your point, or to what you're saying, like, do you think that'd be fun or would it stay fun?
Yeah.
I think that's contextual too. Like, mm-hmm. you're doing a lot of work and hard things and scouting, like perhaps in a different way,
right?
But you're still doing those things,
right?
I think it'd be cool. And then you just have to go hunt another state.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I mean,
it would open up your opportunity. You know what I mean? You might just go like, oh, sweet, I killed a buck in my home state opening day. Let's go. Where am I going next?
Yeah. What would happen if all of a sudden, because sometimes when people change their environments, they get kind of lead feet or, you know, feet stuck in concrete where they don't know what to do. Do you think that there would be a moment where if all of a sudden that property is yours right now. Do you think you'd have a oh shit moment where you're like, now what do I do?
Yeah. I'd have to think about hunting a completely different way than I do right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where, like for me growing up, doing it the hard way, and that's also contextual, right? Because guys in Michigan look at what I've done in the past, or any state where it's just real high hunter numbers, and they're going, you don't know what it's like to hunt hard, or you don't know what it's like to struggle throughout a season, right? Contextual. But
well, yeah, and then like there's different kinds of hard, right?
Right.
Like, oh, I wouldn't say that it's easy to get yourself to a point where you can purchase, farm equipment to put in food plots, mm-hmm. to do this, to dig out a water hole, to have that, year round land manager.
Yeah.
Like it's just different work. It's just all work. It's just different.
Yeah. I had a guy recently that I was talking to, and he basically told me, he's like, I felt the exact same way that you do now, until I went in, he bought a small farm, like a hobby farm. He did some hinge cutting in it, and he planted one food plot, like a small clover plot. And he goes, I thought that way too, until I saw the fruits of my labor. I saw does using this bedding area, and I saw deer using the food plot that I did all the work for. And then my thought process slowly started to change, because it kind of changed to, yes, I'm still a hunter, but I am now also a habitat manager as well. And he got a kick out of that.
Yeah. I mean, you're a steward of the land, and you are, it's rewarding in new and different ways. Right?
Right.
So you're getting some things out of the hunt, essentially, even though a lot of that work isn't while you're hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all different. It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if for some reason, Mark, in the next, I don't know how long this farm is going to be on the market, you get a hold of some money, I get a hold of some money, and one of us will make it happen, and then the other person will get to have a lifetime permission slip for that farm.
That's a deal.
Digital deal? Good. Digital deal. There we go. All right. All right, my friend. Well,
we got that settled.
Yeah, we got that settled. That's all I really wanted to talk about today. But while I got you on, why don't we talk a little bit? We were kind of spitballing before the episode started, and I thought about some having a conversation, kind of a BS episode about some of your favorite gear, some of your wish list gear. I'll share my thoughts, and we'll just shoot from the hip like I always do. You down?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. Mark, do you have a wish list for hunting gear and equipment?
So I do. Some of it is, replacements, mm-hmm. for current gear, new updated models, things of that nature. But the last 2 years, man, I'm feeling like I'm in a really, really good spot,
yes.
as far as gear goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually. Oh, yep. I can think of a couple things. Yeah. I've got a couple wish list things too.
All right. I'm going to, before you get into that, I will agree with you. Like, I feel like over the last, I'm going to say 7 years, it's taken me roughly 7 years to curate my current hunting gear and equipment list that I currently have. And I'm very happy with everything that I currently have. Now, there are some products that obviously I wish I could have, or I wish I could afford, like that farm, but I'm really happy with what I have. And I've also realized that the gear doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have more success in certain areas, right? You want to be comfortable. You want to have boots that, can get you through a hunt, but at the same time, you probably could go with a lesser boot or a lesser equipment and still have the same success. Maybe. Right. So what are some of the items on your wish list?
So items on my wish list, and again, like probably completely unnecessary. And sometimes like I have a love-hate relationship with getting a new bow. Yep. Because like part of getting a new bow is fun because you're figuring it out.
Yes.
And then part of getting a new bow is why did I get a new bow? Because now I got to get it all set up again and yep. do all those things. Yep. But man, been looking at, you know, some of the new Hoyts out there. Mine is a few years old, like 3-4 years old. And, yep. you know, they're kind of like the new hotness. They've got some new colors. You know, that's always important, Dan. You always yep. need a new color. So that would be one thing. Man, I'm a carbon guy when yeah. it comes to bows.
Okay.
Have been for a number of years. I'm temperature sensitive, and I do think, you know, holding that carbon riser can be a benefit. And I know a lot of times we hang our bows in the tree, but case in point, you know, maybe this speaks to my ability as a deer hunter here in Wisconsin, but I was still hunting deer mm-hmm. in January, Dan.
Yep.
Not by choice. You know, and I got into a spot that I was pretty confident some deer were going to come out. I was pushing my chips in as far as, you know, the wind. I knew it was kind of down in the bottom. It was going to be swirly. There was some food down in the bottom. I'd kind of done an observation sit a couple weeks prior when like 14 deer came out into this little pocket. And I knew I had actually gone down in. I'm like, dude, this will never work. The wind is way too swirly.
Yeah.
It was better this day that I went in, but I also knew I was going to be right on top of the deer. I wasn't going to be able to stand and draw. I wasn't going to be able to grab my bow and draw. Like I was going to have to sit down, draw slow if I got an opportunity and shoot mm-hmm. a deer in this corner. And so I had to hold my bow the whole time.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was, that's, you know, everybody's got their preferences. That's my preference. So
have you always been a Hoyt guy?
I have, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you like about Hoyt?
Man, early in the days, dude, I was influenced, Dan. These yep. darn influencers. Chuck
yep.
Adams.
Yep.
Dude, he was a Hoyt guy, you know, super slam, knocking down grizzly bears, everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. I was like, I need to be like that guy. I think the bows that were like the big bows at the time, you had Hoyt, you had PSE, you had Martin. Mm-hmm. Martin was a big brand at the time. I'm trying to think of some different ones as well.
Matthews.
Yeah, I think that was even, you know, a little bit later. I think about the time I got my first bow, like Matthews was on scene for a couple of years. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, I went with the Hoyt and the, you know, that original, my first few bows were actually, you know, they were aluminum riser bows and then, you know, they came out with the carbon stuff and I was like, yeah, I think I'm into that. So,
yeah. Do you notice on your carbon bows, like more vibration when you shoot compared to an aluminum riser?
You know, I probably can't speak to that because honestly, it's been a while since yeah. I've shot a bow with aluminum riser. So
yeah.
I'd be hesitant to speak to that. You know, again, like there's a lot of great bows out there. I mean, there's people just doing fantastically Absolutely. Wonderful things with bows. I think in a lot of ways you probably can't go wrong.
Yeah.
And it just comes down to shooting them on personal preference. I did shoot some of the new Hoyts at the Conservation Expo, and they to gauge quietness in that environment.
Yeah.
You know, not the best,
right.
But like dead in the hand. I thought that, you know, which I think, you know, maybe there's a link to vibration there. Like it was, they're pretty solid.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. It's always cool. Like I like talking with people who are not necessarily brand loyal, but they've had good results with a certain product. And they're just like, you know what? I'm just not going to steer away from that. Over the years, I started out and to this day, and I think what really caught me about the Bowtech Tribute from like 2006 is because the bow I had before that was such a piece of junk that no matter what new bow I got, it was going to be better than my performing one, my current one.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I've ever told this story, but when I got my finger cut off, I got money for it. Insurance money for it. And one of the things that I went and bought was that Bowtech Tribute. I bought brand new arrows. I bought a sight. I bought a rest. And I set myself up 100% with archery equipment. And that's when it's all started for me. So I got back into the woods again. I started hunting hard. I dedicated a lot of time and energy to it. And so Bowtech was the first bow, which I would call a new bow or a flagship bow from back in the day. And then I kind of went to Elite. Remember when Elite first came out and they were real hot, and a couple of their bows were really, really awesome. And I shot Elite for a handful of years. And then to this day, one of my favorite bows that I've ever shot is the Prime Logic. Okay?
Okay.
I'm a huge fan of limb stops. I don't know. Does the Hoyt have limb stops on yours?
You know what? I guess I don't know, Dan.
Okay. Well, whether you do or you're not, you know, like some people like that really hard stop, hard back wall. I'm one of those, mm-hmm. one of those people. Right. I don't like the softness at full draw that you get when there's like this mm-hmm. sponge. I don't like that. I like bop. That's it. That's where I'm stopping. And so
back yeah. wall. Yep. I'm there.
Yep. And so I like that. And I shot two different versions of Prime. I got the Prime Logic and then the 33 something. I don't know what they called it, but it was 33 was in the name. 33 inch draw. And then I jumped to the Bowtech Solution, which is probably my second favorite bow I've ever had now. And now I think I'm going to be getting Bowtech's new, flagship bow this year. I'm thinking about dropping the coin and doing it. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, man, I've always, there's, like you said, even some of the secondary brands, like, you know, Martin used to be Cat's Pajamas. They kind of fell back a little bit. They're starting to come up. There are a handful of other bows that I've shot within the past 3 years. And, dude, they are so close to competing with the big boys, it's not even funny anymore. I mean, it used to be like, I'm just guessing here, Matthews, PSC, Hoyt, Bowtech, everybody else. And yeah. now that group is getting closer and closer together where I don't know. I'm sure you have your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as an archer, as a bow hunter, man, I mean, as a hunter in general, when you think about the advancements in gear mm-hmm. and what's available today, I mean, it is astounding compared to, you know, even 20 years ago,
right?
Right? I mean, absolutely astounding. We are just so fortunate. But yeah, I mean, Matthew's making a great bow. You know, Hoyt's making a great bow. Bowtech's making a great bow. You know, like you said, kind of the big boys that are out there. And I'm probably, you know, even missing a few, but the technology's there, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and people are figuring it out. And I mean, it's probably tough to go wrong, and it probably does come down to a lot of, you know, like we talked about earlier, like just it's a personal preference. I like this a little bit more,
right?
You know,
right? Okay. What's the next item on your wish list?
So, Dan, so I see you've got a tethered hat on today.
Yep.
So, and I've been doing a fair amount of saddle hunting as of late, and I really like saddles. Mm-hmm. But I've run a climber a lot in my bow hunting career. I feel like, I don't know, I'd ask you, like, I feel like that's like a less popular option. Like less guys are running climbers, maybe than they used to.
Yeah.
But man, I still really like a climbing stand. I've run a lone wolf hand climber that I got many, many years ago. It served me well, shot a lot of deer out of it. But there's that Lone Wolf Custom Gear new climbing stand that I'm pretty hot on, man. I've been looking at that, shave some weight. Always looking to shave weight, Dan.
Yeah.
And it looks like it solves a few things I guess that I'd like to solve with my current system. But when I'm doing like run and gun, public land stuff, just depending on the hunt, how much maybe knowledge I have of that spot, like I'll just alternate back and forth between like my climber and that saddle system. And I really like them both, but that new climber is looking pretty sweet.
What specifically, because I'll be honest, you are a rarity. You don't talk to many guys, unless you're hunting in the Southeast. Southeast equals a lot of pine stands, right? No, like straight up and down trees, right? Where I hunt, dude, there are no straight trees. Okay. And so, I mean, there's probably some, but you're going to have to do a lot of cutting on your way up. Anyway, what I'm getting at is, what is it about a climber that you've liked and have always liked?
So like you said, it is, tree dependent, right? Mm-hmm. You know, right. What is the forest landscape look like in your region? And it's quite possible that a climber is 10,000% not for you.
Right.
Man, a lot of my hunting, you know, I didn't start bow hunting whitetails till I moved to Nebraska in probably 2002, I think I moved there or something like that.
Yep.
And down in those river bottoms, man, there was a lot of trees that I could get up in my climber, and I could just zip up. It was super easy. Yeah, you know, maybe you do a little bit of arborist work, but not that much. So, and I guess what I like, you know, and then here in Wisconsin, a lot of the areas I hunt have trees. Or the predominant trees in the area are conducive to a climber. I'm used to it. Mm-hmm. So I find them extremely fast to get up in. I find them extremely quiet to get up in. They're pretty lightweight. They're comfortable. So oftentimes I'll get to a tree and maybe I brought my saddle system because like if I haven't been to an area before, like I know I can get into a tree with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the tree that generally I want to be in with that, it's going to work. Not always, but I'd say the vast majority of the time. But oftentimes I'm get there, I'm like, oh, I could have just zipped up in my climber.
Yeah. 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 Man, I'll be honest. I've only hunted out of a climber, I think maybe 2 hunts. And it's because I left my hang on and climbing sticks at home one time on accident. I thought it was in my truck. And then I got to my mom's house and my stepdad had a climber. That's all he had. And so I went in and I used it. You know, it serves its purpose, right? I think it serves a purpose just like all this equipment does. And the reason I have kind of drug my feet for so long to get into the saddle hunting is because I was so comfortable with a hang on and climbing sticks. And I have taught myself how to do it and do it quickly and get up in that. So, you know, when you have guys like Andy May telling you, dude, you gotta try saddle hunting. And then all these other people are telling you, dude, you gotta try it. And I respect these people and their opinions. And you get in there and you're like, oh, I see now. I see now why everybody likes saddle hunting, right? You're dropping a lot of weight. It's like, I don't know. But there is benefits because this year I found myself doing a lot of hybrid, what I call hybrid saddle hunting, where I was hunting out of a saddle. And then there were times where I was hunting in a saddle, but on a tree stand. You know what I mean? So instead of my safety harness, I didn't even use a safety harness this year. I only wore my saddle. And so I was hanging off being a little bit more mobile, but then if my back or knee started to hurt a little bit, I could sit down and, you know, take the stress off that. And so I see myself going more towards that hybrid. And then whenever I want to make a strategic move, saddle, platform saddle.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. So, and then when you're doing that hybrid, then are you, I guess you still have the ability to put tension on your tether and shoot facing the tree, but then you can also just turn around just fine and shoot from the platform facing forward as well then?
Yep. You can, it's 360. I mean, you can do 360 just like you could if you were in a, but the thing about the saddle is I didn't need to do this on the buck I killed this year, but if he came in behind me, I would have been able to lean off my stand backwards and get behind the tree. So, but the buck that I was sitting down when he showed up, I stood up and I leaned away from him in my tree stand. And that way, when he came by, I was hanging off the tree in my saddle with my feet on the stand, and I shot him at 25 yards. So, it really wasn't 100% a saddle kill, but I was wearing a saddle when I killed him. So, dude, I love the benefits of it is all I can say as far as saddle hunting is concerned.
Yeah, I dig it, man. I mean, I find them to be incredibly comfortable. You know, one of the biggest things that I like about it is, you know, you shove everything in your backpack, your steps, you know, you just put them, at least the, how I do it, you know, I just have them on the exterior of my pack. And you're so self-contained as you move through the woods. You know, you don't have stuff hanging out. You're not catching on things. You can be quieter. It's just easier to move through the woods with essentially just the profile of your body.
Yep.
It's lightweight. You know, I always carry a backpack with me anyway, if I can, or some sort of backpack. So it's, you know, you're not out anything there. And if you kill a buck and you need to break it down a little bit, you've got your backpack with you. I don't know. There's a lot of pluses. I do really, really like it.
Yeah. What's next on the list?
Golly, new bow, probably switch up my arrow system again. That's a perpetual quest for me to find the perfect hunting arrow broadhead combination.
I know what it is.
Keeping those guys in business. What is it?
Day six arrows. You ever heard?
I mean, that's what I'm looking at right now. Dude, yeah.
Here's why I like that company, right? Again, I say this all the time. I like companies where the owner is a serious hunter and the owner of Day Six Gear is a serious, serious hunter. Okay. And he, like, if anybody's listening to this, go to, I forget if it was Nine Finger Chronicles or if it was the Hunting Gear podcast, and look up Brian Broderick and he's the Day Six owner. Look that up, listen to that episode. After that, you're going to want to buy his arrows anyway. Anyway, the product is legit, dude. And I don't want to say I'll never go away from them, but as of right now, I don't see anything else in my quiver in the future as long as Day Six is a thing, man.
So interestingly enough, timing-wise, which it's not out yet. I don't know when we're going to release this. So maybe it will be out when this hits the digital airwaves, Dan, but podcasted with Brian yesterday. It's likely going to be one of our longer podcasts, but as he went through his philosophy when it comes to arrows, talking about the products and I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That is how I think about things. And like you said, the guy's an absolute killer. He shot tons of deer, you know, grew up in a state with deer and hogs with the, you know, extremely liberal seasons. So you have like a ton of field experience coming into play there, testing of things and seeing the result, you know, versus just, you know, pontificating about things that you don't have that firsthand experience with. Seems like a pretty cool system.
Yeah.
I've got my eye on it pretty hard.
It is. Now I got a question for you. How many times did he say whisker biscuit in the interview?
So, okay. Well, this, we didn't get to rest. Oh,
okay. Okay. All right.
So I don't think we have one whisker biscuit, but I was listening to a different podcast with Brian and, he's still rocking the whisker biscuit and I respect it. Like it took me, so I haven't been shooting one lately, but, it took me a while to hold on one second. Hey, sweetie, can you turn your iPad off? If you can't tell right now, I'm working from home today.
Stay at home dad mode. So,
yeah, it's a no school day. So doing the work from home deal. If you hear, we just heard an iPad, maybe you did. If you hear a fight break out, mm-hmm. Don't run.
Yep.
That might incite a charge. What I do, just go to the ground and play dead. That's what I do.
That's the best dad method ever. It's funny you say that. I have to tell this story. One day, I've told part of the story before, but one day I show up to my uncle's house. He is in his garage skinning a beaver, right? Meanwhile, his son is on the floor. And you know that big sharp knife that has two handles that they scrape the fat off the...
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that. His son, probably 2 years old, was playing with that thing. Okay?
And the sharp knife.
Very sharp. And so I look at my uncle and I go, hey, what's the trick to raising kids? And I was in college at the time. I might have had a kid. I don't know if I, you know, there's a chance that there's other Dan Johnsons out there that I don't know about. But he goes, you just got to ignore them. And I take that into my daily parenting every single day. There's times where you just have to ignore your kids.
It's self-preservation.
Exactly. So what were we talking about? Whisker biscuits?
Whisker biscuits. So I remember when the Whisker Biscuit came out, I was working for Cabela's at the time at their HQ in Sydney. And it was the aesthetic look of it. Like I couldn't get over. I'm like, this thing is wild. I can't do it. And then everybody was running. I'm like, okay, I can only resist for so long. I got to try this thing. And I loved it. It is a fantastic system. Since then, you know, I've gone to a drop away. Dude, you cannot deny the practicality, mm-hmm. how it works, how amazing it is in the field as far as like keeping your arrow on, potentially if you're like a spot and stock type person. It's like, I don't even want to say this because I feel like, I'll just say this. We have a minivan.
Yep.
You know,
it's all right. And dude. It's okay.
I was kind of anti minivan too. Like it doesn't look great. It's not cool. Dude, the practicality and functionality is off the flipping charts, and I feel like that's where the Whisker Biscuit lies too.
I think the title of this episode is Mark Boardman Drives a Minivan.
Well, I mean, I've got my primary.
You drive a minivan sometimes, right?
Dude, I will for so many things, I pick it over driving my truck.
Like you said, it does have that practicality, dude.
Did my street cred just like literally like I don't have street cred anymore? Like, did people just stop listening?
No. Here's the deal. What you've done is you've said a very relatable thing. And what you've done is there's a dad out there who is embarrassed to drive a minivan. But guess what? You just admitted to driving a minivan, and now that guy feels better about himself because of you. So kudos to you, dude. You made other guys happy today.
I hope that's the case. I saw a sticker on the back of a minivan one time, and it said, I used to be cool.
Yeah.
I'm like, I feel you.
I feel you. I don't know why this popped into my head, but are you a synthetic or are you a leather boot guy?
Both.
Yeah.
You know, both. I'd say, you know, the boot, you know, we're talking earlier that we might talk gear. Man, the boot that I've settled on, which actually I think they've modified it, so I think it might be a partially synthetic boot now, but the Crispy Laponia.
Okay.
I still got a set of the OGs because I bought a set of the OG one before they made the two, and then I think they're coming out with a third version lately. So, mm-hmm. and I'm due to, I've worn those out pretty good, but man, that boot is so light. It's so comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, goes high enough that gives you enough protection for, you know, really anything I need to do. Dude, it's like putting on a slipper. It is like wearing a slipper. They're about 16 ounces. I don't think, like I said, maybe it's just because I'm a pansy, but I'm like a stickler on weight. And yep. if I can remove weight off my feet that I'm picking up constantly, over time, I just think that makes a huge difference. So yeah, I really like that boot a lot.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I like the synthetics. They have their role, but I've been doing a lot of research on leather and how leather actually stays waterproof longer. Leather forms to your foot better, than a synthetic. And, I'm not sure which one breaks in faster. I forgot that. So I'd just be guessing, but, I think the next boot I buy, I feel like it needs to be more leather. I'm going to try more leather. The only thing about that is leather, like the first time you walk out into the woods with leather boots, there's so many scuffs on them. And then it's not that the functionality fades away, but they just look more used than a synthetic boot. You know what I mean? And so I've always kind of drugged my feet because for the most part, the boots that I'm looking at seem to be like about $150, $100 more per pair than a synthetic like I wear now.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I imagine I always put sort of like I treat my boots before, like when I get them out of the box, I'll put some whatever, like it's like, I think it's some sort of combination of beeswax, waterproof.
Silicone spray or something like that.
Yeah, it's like I could go grab it, but it's more of like a, you know, it's like comes in like a jar container, and then you rub it in with like a cloth. But yeah. So I always do that because I don't like the way new leather boots look. They look too nice, man. You gotta like get that
get them
treated, and then like that's just the little badges of honor. You know, every time you put a scuff on the darn things.
But. Heck yeah. Okay, now I have to ask you a Vortex Optics question because one of my wish list products is actually a product that you guys carry, and that is the binocular with the built-in rangefinder in it. All right, again, Brian told me he has a pair, and he's like, dude, it is so cool to not have to bring a rangefinder up to your face and have one less thing on your bino harness, you know? And so I've kind of been looking at some Vortex Optics binoculars with a rangefinder in it. Talk to me a little bit about that product specifically, and do you use them?
So I have, and again, you know, and maybe it's just because I'm fortunate I work at Vortex, so I'll go back and forth and try things. But yeah, so the optic that you're talking about right now, that'd be the Fury HD 5000 laser range finding binocular. Again, optics in it, incredibly sound, really good optics. You've got, you know, 5000 yard ranging capability on a reflective target, Dan, so I think that should, you know, get you by bow hunting. They're nice to have. Like I said, you're minimizing kit. You're minimizing the profile on your harness. You know, less things to potentially hang up on. You're shaving a little bit of weight. Your field of view when you range something is going to be way better. You know, you can observe and range really, really well. You've got 10 power magnification there. It's a great unit for sure.
Yeah. And so I'm on the website right now, and you have two versions. You have the normal one, and then you have the AB. What's the difference between these two?
So the AB version has the Applied Ballistics onboard ballistic solver. So that's going to be more for your rifle hunters out there who are looking to extend their effective range and be able to, when they range, not only get the range, but get their ballistic solution so they know how much elevation to dial into their rifle scope to execute a long range shot. And that's like definitely a good data in, good data out thing. But man, if you've got good ballistics data and you input it in there, you're going to be ready to rock. And again, it's going to save time in the field. It's you don't have to look, you know, down to check a chart or something like that to get your ballistic solution. And
once you get it set up, then you range a target, and then it comes back with where you should aim or how many. Because I'm really green with sports shooting terminology, so where you need to hold on your crosshairs in order to get that shot accurately, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a reticle in your rifle scope,
that's right.
That has, we'll say, like, you know, mil or MOA based graduations in it, mm-hmm. you know, and it says, oh, 650 yards, you need to dial or hold X amount of MOA or mils, you know, it's going to give you that number that you can hold or dial to. I'd say most people are going to dial. Yeah. So you're just going to be like, oh, I need to dial, you know, whatever, we'll say 5.2 or, you know, 5.5 MOA.
Yeah.
You know, you just dial that on your elevation turret, and then you're able to hold dead on with the center of your reticle. If there's no wind, like I said, that's going to be a dead on hold. If there is wind, you're going to want to account for that with the horizontal crosshair and execute a good shot and hopefully watch that animal tip over.
Heck yeah. Okay, let's see here. I'm trying to think. I just had something pop into my head, but then I lost it because my brain is slowly deteriorating every single day. But man, what was it? It was... This is bad interviewing skills, dude. Like, you don't see people take pauses and have mental breakdowns on TV like I'm having right now.
That's what the power of editing, Dan.
Yeah, you're right, but I don't edit.
I depend. Oh.
Yeah, I don't edit. I just let it roll. I like it raw. So.
I don't know. We're talking about gear we want, gear we like that mm-hmm. we have.
Yep. Oh, I know exactly what I was going to talk about. Do you own a handgun?
I do.
Okay. When you went on your Alaska trip, did you take a sidearm with you?
I did.
Okay. So I don't have a handgun. I want to buy a handgun for like a potential Alaska trip someday. Maybe I'll go hunt elk or some kind of species in Montana where there's grizzlies or bear, or just for self-protection, right? What sidearm or handgun would you recommend that might cover home protection and sidearm somewhere on your body during a hunt?
So, Dan, if you're going to pick something that I do the least of from, you know, a recreational practice perspective, it's shooting a pistol.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, shooting a pistol is pretty darn hard. Shooting a pistol well yeah. is pretty darn hard. The pistol that I have, that a lot of people have, or at least a variant of, that is a nice crossover size and caliber is a Glock 19.
Okay.
Again, it's like almost a full-size pistol, but it's also not a compact pistol. Like mm-hmm. to me, or, you know, even concealed carry, for carry into the field, it hits a shootability, right? Because right. it does, you know, approach that full-size pistol. Smaller pistols are, I mean, pistols are hard to shoot already. Then you go with a smaller version, and that's going to, you know, in my opinion, be a lot more difficult to shoot potentially, you know, unless you're really good at it and you get used to it.
Yeah.
Which you can do. That's going to take practice. So, I would look at that. It's a 9mm. Mm-hmm. So that is what I carried into Alaska. Some folks might say that's not a big enough gun for Alaska. It could be right. Mm-hmm. I would potentially argue a little bit differently. A lot of guys are carrying 10s into grizz country now. They want the capacity of an autoloader, but they want a little bit more gas. I get that too. I would never tell somebody not to do that for those reasons. There's no, I mean, a 10 is nearly double a 9.
Yeah.
I'll tease a little project that we've done recently that we haven't put out yet, but we did a little bit of testing on 9s and 10s in relation to the bear defense topic recently, and some pretty cool data points, you know, some interesting results. So, maybe folks can, I don't know the date when that's actually going to hit, but stay tuned for that, because we found some interesting stuff. So.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I like studies like that where it, instead of, you know, maybe you shot it into, did you shoot some of those bullets into ballistics, Gel?
Maybe.
Okay. All right. I won't give it away. Don't give it away. But it's always cool to put a real element into some of these studies, right? Now, did you have somebody did someone put the ballistics gel on a cart, then charge you with it, and then you had to shoot the gel?
We didn't do that. Okay. We didn't quite do that. But we probably need a could be a safety component.
Yeah,
there
there's
again.
A safety. There is a safety component there. I'd hate for Sawyer to get shot in the leg.
Oh boy, nobody likes that, right?
No one likes to get shot in the leg.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, and that's a topic that a lot of guys are thinking about, and that's why we wanted to do this. Is
yeah,
you know, that Western landscape, or if you go to Alaska, hunting in grizz country or brown bear country, that is our reality now.
Yeah,
and a lot of guys or folks are carrying carrying a sidearm. You know, they're picking the cartridge for reasons A, B, and C. You know, a lot of that is hypotheticals. And I'd say even at the end of our testing, like, you still got some hypotheticals. Like, you know, we didn't have, you know, 20, you know, charging brown bears on tap to see what the result was going to be, right?
Right.
But hopefully at the end of the day, leaving with more information than what we started with,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For some reason... Yep, you remember.
And I say this, you're talking about pistols. The pistols that we shot in that test, though, were Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0s.
Mm-hmm.
Really liked those as well.
Yeah.
Definitely a fully featured high-quality pistol. They functioned fantastically. The form factor was great. Multiple back straps coming with the pistol to fit your hand. I'd say that's one thing that I wasn't going to do off the start, and I'm glad that we did, was switch out the back strap. And it made a dramatic difference in how that pistol, I think, felt, but also how I was able to shoot it. So,
Yeah, that's something that I need to mess around with, because I don't know. In today's world, it just seems crazy to not have a gun now. So I want to make sure I do a little bit more research on that. Or I could get the gun from Batman. I don't know if it was George Clooney or if it was Michael Keaton, the early Batman, where the Joker pulled that gun out, the revolver, out of his pants, and it had like a 6-foot barrel on it. And he shot down the airplane with it.
I mean, you're going to get some increased velocity with that longer barrel for sure, Dan.
Is it practical?
Oh, I think so.
That'd be funny if someone, instead of bringing a rifle to go kill an elk out west, they brought that revolver with a long barrel on it and like some ridiculous scope on it.
I mean, also, there's a segment of folks who are, they actually do that. I mean, they specialize in these long range pistols.
Yeah.
And are doing, you know, they're almost like, almost like a hybrid between the rifle and the pistol in some ways when you're talking like bearing length and size and weight and things like that. Yeah, they do some crazy stuff with those.
I believe it. Well, I think we had a good conversation here today, Mark. Man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this. I'll let you get back to being a stay-at-home dad. And, man, good luck this spring, man.
No, hey, I appreciate it, Dan. It's always fun to jump on and hopefully we covered some at least semi-important ground here. But yeah, no, good luck this spring. Hopefully everybody out there has, you know, some turkey plans or some bear plans, maybe a little bit of fishing. Get outside, because I know my cabin fever has fully crept in, and I'm ready to do it.
That's a fact, my friend. All right, take care. I'll see you when I see you.
All right, thanks, Dan. Take care. Bye.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.